The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Unlock a new era in podcasting with Unfiltered Studios. Ready to break free from the ordinary? Dive into a world where authenticity meets innovation. Our network isn't just about podcasts. It's a revolution. From nostalgia to movies, sports to self-improvement, find your favorite podcast in an array of diverse shows, only at Unfiltered Studios. Join the movement. Subscribe to Unfiltered Studios today and join the podcasting revolution. Unfiltered Studios, where every voice finds its place. Visit unfpod.com today to find your favorite show.
Unfiltered Studios will help you press record.
And hello, movie lovers, and thank you for joining us in detention. I have Beth with me, I have Rossi with me, I have Zoe. We're the misfits, and I'm breaking shit already, and it's not even 11 seconds in, and I'm already prepared, so that's okay, but that's what we do here at detention. So go on ahead, bring your favorite lunch, trade it with somebody. If you don't have a friend, I'm just sorry, you're just gonna have to sit in the back. But let's go on ahead and let's review The Breakfast Club, and don't forget about me. And hey guys, welcome to the show. It's great to have everyone here for our big special here. I have Beth for the Made for Movie TV podcast. I have Zoe from the Backlook Cinema podcast. And of course, my good, awesome friend, Rossi, and co-host from Movie Lovers Unite, and also Rossi Talks, and also Rossi's Clubhouse. So yeah.
Thanks, but John.
You're very welcome. You're very welcome. So, guys, my question for you is this. When was, like, the very first time that you've seen The Breakfast Club?
I saw it for the first time 2 weeks before my 16th birthday when it came out in the theaters. I, like, went the weekend it came out. It was a big deal. It was a big deal. So, I think everybody in my school went to see it. So, it came out, like, in February 15th, I think, of 85. So, I would have seen it that very weekend within a few days.
Oh, I saw it a few years after it came out. I couldn't wait to see it. We rented it and absolutely loved it. I've seen it so many times. One of my favorite movies. And at the time, I loved those movies, the Molly Ringwald movies anyway. So, yeah, Breakfast Club was perfect.
Yeah, so The Breakfast Club was like in a zeitgeist when I was growing up. And it's something that everybody talked about. And it, you know, came out right around the time I was in my formative years. And I saw it for the first time 2 weeks ago.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Really?
That's going to be interesting.
Wow.
Yeah.
As an adult,
like 40 years removed from my teenage years, that's when I watched it.
That's okay. Crazy.
So, you know, here's the thing. With my nostalgia rating, it's going to be a little bit down. But, you know, I want to know your nostalgia rating right now, Zoe, from watching it from adulthood.
Well, I don't really have a nostalgia rating. Like, it would have to be something like zero, because I don't.
That's fine. No, that's fine. We'll go with a zero.
I didn't watch it. Like, I don't have didn't have the feelings that normal nostalgia stuff would give me. Right. Like the Transformers, the movie, for example. That's I could give that a, if it was a 1 to 10 nostalgia rating, that would be like an 11. But or something like The Breakfast Club, it's just something that I remember people talking about, but I didn't actually get to watch it. I always wanted to watch it, though. That's okay. The thing. Okay. There's a lot of movies that came out that I totally missed that I wanted to watch that I didn't catch.
Did you like it, though?
I thought it was all right.
I still love you.
Here's the problem. Here's the problem. Because I'm watching it as an adult. So, like, I knew that had I watched it when it first came out, I would have absolutely loved this movie. It would have been, like, one of my favorites. There are a lot of people in the movie that I identify with. But at the same time, but like watching it as an adult, it's like it's hard to like any of those kids or the adult that was supervising them. But and it's not it's another movie that doesn't have a traditional narrative. So it's a little harder to grasp onto sometimes when you're dealing with a movie that's where, you know, there's no journey really. They're just kind of like sitting in the classroom getting to know each other. And so something like that can sometimes be a little difficult, at least for me.
Okay, so here's the thing. My nostalgic rating is going to probably be a little lower than what I get from John Hughes movies. Okay. You know, like Beth and I, we've done like a whole entire John Hughes thing. That's like our first thing that we ever did was 16 Candles.
16 Candles, yeah.
Yeah, and so my thing is this. So if I would actually have to put down a nostalgic rating, it would be a 3.5 out of 5. That's how I feel about it nostalgically. Because I'm with Zoe. I always heard about it. I heard people talking about it even when I was in high school. And I was in high school and everything, and I graduated in 04. But, you know, I've never went on and said, hey, I want to check out The Breakfast Club. So it wasn't until my freshman year of college that I went and watched it in a young adult eyes. And then I found myself like this, okay? I remember seeing this movie as a kid and just passing it and never really gave it a chance. But it was never something that I watched when I was a kid. If I had to pick out all the John Hughes movies that I've watched nostalgically, I would have to put this one at the bottom, sadly. I wish my parents did introduce me to an age where I was in high school, but my very first time watching this was in college, and then it hit. But I hit differently. I found myself seeing myself through the eyes of the brain and how I was that awkward kid in high school trying to find my place, and even in college trying to find my place, and that was different, hoping people would accept me for who I am. So, you know, I would share every single time that the principal was getting chewed out by the ball bag kid as well. I would always cheer whenever John was basically being a douchebag to him. And stuff like that. And I was like, yes, put him in his place. That's what I'm talking about. So now as a kid, and not as a kid, but now as an adult. And I didn't learn shit, by the way. But, you know, looking at it through the lenses of it, of adulthood now, it's totally different. And we'll get into why it's different for me viewing it now, but I appreciate this a lot more, and I love this a lot more, you know. This was okay. Brandy says this was one of my favorite John Hughes movies.
I agree with Brandy.
Right.
Like Beth and I always said, John Hughes knows how to write for kids,
yes,
and teenagers, right. And he puts himself in the shoes of teenagers,
right?
So this is just like any other John Hughes movie. And has everything that's relatable with the cast. Everything is perfect with he decided to do. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, one of the things that I loved about this movie, and my nostalgia rating is really high because I was that age when it came out. I mean, it just couldn't have been. I mean, I related to all the characters in one way or another. But so when I think about the writing of this, I actually think it's so strong because he had to ramp this movie up and get these characters in fast and hard, and he didn't do it in a way that made it seem awkward or weird anywhere. Like, it was believable to me, because, you know, like John, when we watch Planes, Trains and Automobiles, that was a slow build up to a really beautiful ending. You know, 16 Candles was just there for fun,
right?
Well, they meant to have a message, and if we didn't believe that those characters were going to connect in the way they did, that whole movie was going to fail completely. And I do think it held up in that regard. I think John Hughes was a great writer, and I think he directed it, and I think he had a really clear vision of what he wanted. And I actually think he fulfilled his own like hope of how that movie was going to turn out. And again, like I said, my nostalgia factor is just really high. I loved Molly Ringwald from Facts of Life in the late 70s on.
Right. Yeah, me watching it, you know, I remember watching the 16 Candles. And like you said, Beth, when this one came out, you got to see the characters that you watched in other films at that time in a serious light. Like, I've never seen Molly Ringwald like that in a film. So it was really exciting to get to see that side of them. And then watching the film, for me, my nostalgia rating, it's like Beth, it's a 5 out of 5. I mean, I watched it today, you know, again, for haven't seen it in a while. And I cried. Mm-hmm. I remember those emotions, but I was a kid when it came out. So, you know, being in high school, you connect with those kids because you're either in one of those groups and school at the time, did the pressure that it has on you. And then to be one of those kids, you're carrying something and you relate to it. So right. Watching it today, I was watching it with my husband for the first time. He's never seen it. So I'm on the couch hiding, you know, the fact that I'm crying to this film in certain parts because it still hits me like that, you know, and he laughed a few times, you know, he just didn't get it like that. You know, but I love this film and I loved Molly Ringwald as well. Back to Life and, you know, just following her career as a young actress.
Yeah. Agreed.
Yes. I think me and your husband have something in common.
You know, when you said that, y'all, when you had mentioned that, I'm like, oh my gosh. Like, because my husband was like, you know, he laughed. There were some funny parts, but at the end, he was like, now that makes no sense. Why would they all of a sudden those two hook up? Like they just happened. It just happened. And I'm like, no, were you not watching a film? They showed you that they had connections, you know, right. Like the jock and the crazy girl, Ally Sheedy's part. You can see that they liked each other. You can see where Judd Nelson and Molly Ringwald's part came to where you can see them filling each other. But he didn't get that. He just thought it just like they just did that at the end. And it's like, no, it happened throughout the whole film. But I'm seeing it differently because, you know, but so I, you know, when you said that, I my husband felt the same way.
Yeah, it's not that I didn't get the film. Like, I totally understood all of it that was happening. And but, like, I can identify with some of the characters. But at the same time, it was like, these kids. Like, I'm an old man. I'm an old man watching this movie. Right?
Right.
Kids today. Or back then. Kids back today. Then.
My generation. Right? Let's see. We're going to read some of the comments and then we'll get into the meat and potatoes of this film. So Brandy says, I'm pretty much identified with Ally Sheedy.
Allison.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Who did you guys identify with?
Let's see.
Well, for me, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I thought you were still thinking about it.
I was. Go ahead. I was.
I actually put it in the chat. I'm a little bit of Allison and a little bit of Brian. And I thought about the other one. And I was like, nope, I wasn't anywhere near Jock. And I wasn't anywhere near the what do you call him? A douchebag? A bully? He's a little bit of both of those. And I was none of those. At least not in school. And then you had... you know, Claire, and I was none of that. I was too poor to be anywhere near something like Claire. Right. So those two, because when you're introduced to Allison, it's like, I'm not the dude that would show up for detention just for kicks, but I am the dude that bites his fingernails. Like I did all of mine off. So it's like, so when they open it up and she's loudly biting her fingernails, I felt embarrassed for me because that was me doing that all of the time. And I was a little bit weird, but not so like she took her weirdness up to 11. Like I could never reach the heights of strangeness that she did, but I was a little bit weird. Everybody saw me as that. And then Brian, because I was a little bit of a nerd, but not as much of a nerd as Brian was. Like he's a member of all these intellectual clubs. He's a like a math genius, and I suck at
math. I suck at math though too. Now that I'm thinking of it.
Right. So, I identify as an artist, and they didn't have really a straight artist in this group, but I think that Allison was the closest to being an artist than all of the others. And so that's why I closely identify with her.
Yeah, I agree with you. For me, definitely in high school, I would say Ally Sheedy, Allison, her part as well, because the same thing, just artistic. We moved around a lot, so we weren't at a school for a long period of time. So you tend to be the kid that doesn't know everyone. So I would spend a lot of my time in a library. I enjoyed reading, you know, and so I identify with that character a lot.
Yeah, I think I would have to say Allison as well. Maybe a little bit of Bender, only because I smoked. But a lot of people did, so I don't know. I mean, I shouldn't.
When you say you smoked, you're not talking about cigarettes, are you?
I'm totally talking about cigarettes. I'm not gonna fess up anything illegal. But I mean, I definitely was more like you know, as a writer, much more artistic that way. Definitely not as weird as Allison, and I wasn't a kleptomaniac, but I definitely identified with her and a little bit of Bender too, you know. I don't know. He had a little bit of an edge, but so we would have called him at our high school a burnout. I don't remember what they called him in the letter now, but that's what we would have referred to him
the
as.
Criminal.
No, the yep. criminal, that's right. The but criminal. He wasn't a full That's the sad thing about that movie is that they kind of caged him in there and he wasn't a full-fledged criminal. He was probably going to be, sadly. I mean,
kept on going on the road that he was.
Yeah, yeah. But there were a couple people in my high school that kind of seemed like they were going down that road. And then, you know, one of them went on and got a PhD. You know, I mean, one of them went on to law school. So you never know.
Right.
So at first I said Brian because of my nostalgic. But if I had to go ahead and pick out the character that relates to me, it would actually be Allison with a touch of Brian. Because I was in the strategy club. I played tabletop games. I was into that kind of stuff. I was also artistic. So therefore that's how it plays with that. So that's basically how I describe myself. I'm also into music. I was also a goth punk rock person in high school too.
Yeah.
So you know. 5x5 nostalgia. I feel like I have aspects of all of them, but not one person entirely. That's the same way for me. I think I might have split personality disorder that I might have to look at. But Beth, just remember, it's not illegal unless you get caught. So.
Right.
I think I've passed that point of getting in trouble at this point, right? Because I think since it's 40 years old, that would mean I've graduated high school, I don't know, 10 years ago now?
But all right, let's go on ahead. Let's get into this. We're going to be stripping away the nostalgia and just talking about the things that we loved about the film. And then after that, we'll give you our... looking in through the lenses of an adult aspect to it. So, with that being said, let's go on ahead. Dear listeners, we accept the fact that we had sacrificed a few minutes of your time to talk about a movie we love, but we think you're crazy not to tune in and join the discussion. You see, to us, you just want to see us. Film enthusiasts, podcast hosts, pop culture junkies. What we found out is that each one of us is a brain, an athlete, a basket case, a princess, and yes, even a criminal. When it comes to spoiling movies, sit back and relax and get ready to rumble with the Breakfast Club on Movie Lovers Unite. So,
very nice, John.
Right.
Appreciate it. I've been finagling it back and forth like all day long with that. So I was like, I don't like how this sounds. So I'm gonna try and figure this thing out. Thank you so much. I almost sound like Elvis for a minute there. You guys are talking something poetic. But anyways, I just want to say this. I forgot how this movie starts out because I always thought it started with them in detention. Yeah. I forgot that it pulls every single one of those characters with their parents in there, all except Bender, of course. And it just was awesome to see that, and then you have a David Bowie. First, you get a David Bowie poem or lyric, and then you get the whole entire monologue of the one that I just recited, except for it's not podcasting. If podcasting was a thing back then, it would be modern day times today. So, but yeah, I just thought it was an interesting way of how to start off the film. And I also put this in my notes too. I said, you know, it's interesting how they play it off where everybody's experiencing this for the first time. They're all in this room together for the first time, just as we're in this room together for the first time with them. And we're locked in with them, and we can't get out of this detention if we don't want to. So we actually feel that claustrophobic in a sense of not being able to go anywhere. So I definitely like that.
Yeah. I like the fact that in the beginning, it did, you know, when they're pulling up to the school, so you get an idea of how each kid was, because, you know, who their parents were. So, you know, Molly Ringwald, you know, the rich dad, you know, the jock. And so when they get there, you pretty much know, okay, where each of them have come from, you know, how they are. So I do like how they did that in the middle. And then, you know, we go into the library and, you know, the movie takes off.
Did you guys notice that John Hughes played Brian's dad?
No.
Yeah, he was John's dad, uncredited. I don't think he was credited, but yeah. I forgot that until I watched the movie again, and then I'm like, oh, I did know that, because you can totally tell when you know, but I had forgotten. So when I watched it again, I was like, oh, for the like millionth time I saw it, I was like, oh, that's right, yeah. So he played Brian's dad. I think he actually had a line. I think he said something too, but I don't remember what.
Oh, wow.
Well, he, as Brian's dad, he just picks him up because his mother drops him off, and his mother was like,
"That's right."
I forgot, but she was kind of harsh, like, "You got to study or something,
right?"
Like, yeah. Overly.
How are you going to get into school? Da 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 da.
Yeah, but she wanted him to. She wanted him to study his homework or something while he was in detention.
Yeah,
which is what I did. They didn't give us any fun writing assignments when I went to detention.
Right. But yeah, you also get Emilio Estevez, whose parents are forcing him into sports and trying to get scholarships and just putting that pressure on kids, which I've actually seen that around here as well, where parents are putting their focus on the kids to play sports. And so I like that aspect of the fact that you have that going on. It's very realistic. It's very realism whenever you look at it. Then you also have Molly Ringwald's character too, where basically she looks like she doesn't even fit in with someone that belongs in detention at all. So I like how she sticks out with like a sore thumb. Like, it's like, okay, what did this girl do to get detention in the first place? Right. So it makes you kind of question that.
Yeah.
And they didn't go into it. Did they go into her being in detention?
I think she skipped school to shop or something.
Okay.
She was also like 8 a.m. and she's dressed to the nines, full makeup. I mean, she looked pretty good.
Right.
Yeah, I know people like that. Like, even if you're going to detention, you got to put your face on.
Right on.
Absolutely.
Then you also have Bender, who just walks over, almost gets hit by but Allison's mom as well.
Right.
So
right.
But I definitely like how all of them arrive, and then finally you sit down, and then Vernon's breaking down the rules to them.
Right.
About how they can't leave. And I like how Bender's over there breaking his balls the very first time that you see him. And this is like, and looking at it through the adult lenses and everything, like, this little asshole right here.
Right.
And everything.
And he's been in there a lot. Like, he's been in detention, so he knows Vern, you know, and how he is. Has anyone had a teacher like that, though?
Well, apparently he's credited as the vice principal.
Yeah.
So, I guess they just see him around, just being a dick, I guess, to students.
Yeah. Honestly, even today, he'd be a dick.
Yeah.
Like, he's a jackass, and I'm like, I don't know, he was not a good person.
No.
Yeah,
no.
Yeah. He was just an awful person. It's like, even I expected the adult in the room to be the adult in the room. It's like, oh my God, he's just as bad as the kids are. Right?
Yes, for sure. He's down there looking through files.
He's not
trying to
bribe
the janitor.
Absolutely.
He's not even in the room with them, right? You would expect that in detention, like the teacher sitting at the head of the classroom. But no, he goes, skeets off to his room and thinks that he can supervise them from a separate room, which is kind of that's one of his dick moves.
Definitely a dick move. But you know what, though? I and this is from adult lenses, though, that I'm watching this, and I'm watching the janitor and him talk. He goes, "Let's talk."
Right.
So they sit down and goes, "Let me guess, you thought you were passionate about teaching at one time. You thought this was going to be an easy breezy job, Monday through Friday job, off every summer, and be back on Monday. And this is not that kind of job. What you once thought was something that you felt passionate about, now it's just a day-to-day drag." Mm-hmm. And I like how he's also called out on his own BS.
Right.
And everything, and forgetting where he came from whenever he started off being a teacher. So I like how the janitor knows these kids, and he's like the cool janitor where everybody just likes him.
Yeah.
But he also has like you have that little kid-friendly element with with that part, which is what I like, that counterbalance. But I like how he calls him out on his own BS, just like how he calls Bender, how the principal calls Bender out on his own BS.
Right. And everything. I like how they, when they show them bonding, when they first have their bonding moment, mm-hmm. when Bender goes and takes the screw out of the door, you know, and he comes back in there and asking each of them, you know, who it was. And at first, when you first see it, you think that they're going to give up Bender because they're not liking him anyways. But that was like the first interaction that you see that they're protecting each other as kids, you know, against him, you know. So you see that little bonding thing happening there.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. You know? I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And bitches get stitches.
True. Yep.
And
Brian would actually be the one who winds up getting the stitches because
right. Yeah, you would think, you know. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you know, you also have the other stuff that winds up having, all the other shenanigans where basically he winds up breaking the principal's balls, like I said, but also too, he's like, okay, one more time, you're gonna buy yourself another time in detention. Okay. And he winds up smarting off to him saying something else. He goes, okay, you just buy yourself another Saturday. Okay, right. Wait, want to go for two? Okay, I have all the time in the world. What else you got at me? So, you know, as a kid, I'm like, yeah. Now I'm like, okay, now I see why you're mad at him.
Yeah.
And you have every right to be. And yeah.
But it was interesting in that point was Claire was trying to protect him. She's like, stop. She wanted him to shut his file and stop getting detentions.
Right.
Yeah, I think that the common experience that they were having in detention, even though they come from vastly different groups, that was the one common thing that kind of united them in a strange way. And they kind of, so because Vern is like the enemy of my enemy's best friend. So Vern is that one enemy that they rally around themselves to oppose Vern. So the time that you see the group really united are the times when Vern antagonizes the group. I'm calling him Vern like he's from the country. Hey, you Vern.
Vern.
Yeah, but what draws them to be closer and then get to really know each other and what each other's about. And I love that because, you know, with the criminal, for instance, you know, him letting them know how his household was, you know, because he envied all of them, you know, because to him, they came from great households. And then when you find out what he goes through every day, you know, it obviously you feel sorry for him, but you get where he's coming from. I mean, what does he care about detention? No one gives a shit about him. His own family doesn't give a shit about him. So he you know, he's acting the way that you expect for him to act, you know? So, yeah.
Right. Being ridiculed by his father with substance abuse and also to... just basically abusive, like physically, verbal, everything that you can think of. And he narrows down everybody in that room, though.
Yeah.
Like, he goes, he sounds like, you know, golly, Wally, I can't wait to go fishing.
Yeah.
We're going to go fishing. And, Dad, we're going to catch a big old fish. And, I can't wait. I can't wait, Dad. And then there's also the other, there's also Molly Ringwald's character that he imitates, though, too. He ends up knocking everyone down and saying, your world is not as big as you think it is. It's not as bad. Right. My world, welcome to my world. This is what my world is.
Right.
And that's what but what about it for you, Beth? Like what, when you look at those, that scene in itself?
Well, I mean, I think it just sort of adds to the layer of the depth of where they actually were bonding. I mean, I was kind of looking at it a little bit different in that regard because sorry, my dog is barking. I don't know if you can hear that.
Not at all.
I warned you.
Not at all.
No, but yeah, so it was like, I just think it's so striking because it's such an unexpected moment in the film where he sort of reveals that he's being abused at home you kind of don't really know what to do with it because I don't know that they know what to do with it really.
Right.
You know, but you know, as JoJo said too, the others were also miserable in their own household. So we're kind of finding out really because Brian at that point is like, you think that you know my life is that easy? And of course then he, I don't know if it's that same scene or a little bit later where he tells them why he's there, and that is probably my favorite moment in the movie because I just loved how deep that Anthony Michael Hall went with that character. Right. It was so beautiful. Wow. Like, do you know why I'm here? Do you? Do you? And it's, right. I mean, it choked me up when I saw it again.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the part where I was really crying at, because, you know, everyone looked at him as, you know, like, you know, the criminal says, you know, you're the parents', you know, dream. You get grades and all that. But the pressure of that for some kids to not get an F, you know, to have to get good grades all the time, that's a lot of pressure, you know. And to him, it was either good grades or I offed myself, you know. And there are kids out there that actually do feel that way and have done that, you know. So that was real. And he played that part so well, because that part was really real. Like, kids go through that. As far as Molly Ringwald's part, you know, Claire, there are kids in high school that being popular is the hardest thing to do. You have to keep an image up. You have to act a certain way. So every day you get up, you go to school, and you have to put this fake face on and make it seem like everything's great because you're wearing all the name brands. So each one of them, other than I think the only one that doesn't go through that pressure is Allison, other than her home life, you know, because feeling like she's ignored. I mean, at the beginning, when her mom drives off, remember, she stands by the car and then she's going to the front to say something.
The future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
To her mother, and her mother just drives off. So you get, right, you know, her situation. But out of all of them, she'll be your friend. She's not going to judge you, because like she said, I have no friends. And the friends she would have wouldn't treat anyone like that. So she's the best one out of all of them, you know? Right.
Yeah, that's a great point.
You know,
and I want to mention this, Rossi. I want to piggyback off of you for a minute, though, too. Like, I knew someone in high school, like, the girl got a B, and she's crying because she got a B. I'm like, dude, I just bombed my test.
Right.
I would kill for it right now.
Right.
I actually bribed her. I said, look, I'll give you $5. And then I'll give you my F so you can really cry about it. Okay? But I understand the pressure, though, because seeing her getting pressured
right
about it. And I also got pressured, too, because I was just like an average student where I would make an A or a B, mm-hmm, and stuff like that. And that's it. And I would get pressured like that, too, from my parents. But to see someone go to the extreme of being teared up in class and seeing the anxiety of it, it just brought back those memories in seventh grade where that girl was just crying because she got a B, and I'm over there trying to bribe her. But yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And in Brian's case, he was failing shop. He thought that shop would be an easy class. I forgot what grade did he get. I think he was getting a D or an F or something, but it was like the worst grade you can get, and it would drag down his entire grade point.
Right.
And that's what he was getting upset about. And that was one of the things that caused that more tension between him and Bender, was that like Bender would be like a master chief at shop, where Brian is like, Brian has no idea how to use his hands. So,
but what's interesting about that too is that, you know, Brian was like, I would be friends with you, I'm not going to ignore you, whatever. But he did sort of stereotype the people who take shop too, which
he
is sort of interesting, because I don't think it was intentional. And I almost wonder if John Hughes didn't mean to do that, because he seemed so accepting of everybody. But he kind of, when he's like, oh, it's an easy A, he kind of was really putting down the people who take shop, because shop is not that easy. I mean, I tried to make a birdhouse and it did not go well for me. I think it was a birdhouse.
Well, yeah. I don't think that he was putting them down. It's like more like, I should be able to do this. Like, if they can do it, they're
right,
not
then I can do it.
I should be able to do it. So it's not like he's putting them down. He just thinks he doesn't understand the mechanics of, or you know, the mechanism of shops. So like, he doesn't understand it, so that's why he fails. Like, if he understood it, then he could excel just like everybody else could.
Right, but I like the fact though too, man. Like, you have someone that's trying to be perfect because he's perfect in everything else, and then you have this imperfectness of not being good at something, and he doesn't know what to do with it. So he stereotypes other people because he's not good at something. And he's like, this is easy for them. Why is it not easy for me when everything else is easy? Because I'm in philosophy. Right. I'm in these clubs. So
right.
I like that little realism whenever it comes to that, because of the fact that I'm like that too. Like in art class, I took art 1 and 2. Yeah. I like the history.
Yeah.
I can't draw a fucking thing.
Me either.
I can draw a stick. If you want a great Amish stick person, I can do that. I drew a giraffe once on an accident. Don't ask me how I did it.
It was supposed to be a bear.
And don't get me do paper mache, because I also stuck at that too in theater class. I was supposed to make a mask. It looked like a Slipknot mask. So, yeah. But yeah, I can definitely relate as to that, you know.
What about the jock when he told why he was in there, that part? I mean, how horrible was that? And he did it to please his dad, because his dad is talking about all the antics he did in high school. And he felt that his dad would be proud of him if he did that. And telling that story, I mean, I'm just like boohooing, because, you know, that is how, that's the worst, just horrible. And then the whole time I'm thinking about the kid, like, what if I were that kid, you know, and how that would have made me felt. It's just horrible that he was in there for that, and that he knew it was wrong. You know, but he thought it would make his dad, you know, happy. So the pressure of that, of having to be that guy.
Right.
Yeah. The gag of it is, his father was proud of him. Like his father dropped off. It's like, the thing is that you just got caught. That's all. It's like, just try not to get caught next time. So his father was proud of him. His like, father is raising. Yeah. His father for his father is not good enough for his son to be a star athlete. Really? He also has to be raised in the ways of toxic masculinity.
Yeah.
He has to be a bully and a jock. He has to act like a typical jock, of pushing over weaker kids so that he can be greater and at the same time be a scholarship wrestling student. So and that's a terrible way to raise children, but I assume that that's how some kids are raised.
I
know competitive fathers and everything. Like I know this one father, for instance, that made his kids compete in all-star championship games as kids, and thinking that they're going to pay for scholarships because he's cheap. I mean, because he's a nice person. That was their life with sports try to get scholarships and pressure them. If the kid missed something wrong, the kid was in tears.
Right.
I'm like, you're such a douchebag. I'm not going to do that to my kids.
Right.
I made a promise to myself a long time ago. I said, no. I was never like that when I was a kid. I'm not going to do that to my kids.
Right.
And, you know, thank you for showing me what I'm not going to do. And it's just sad to see Emilio Estevez's father doing that to him, putting more pressure on him. It's already hard enough to beat a wrestling match.
Yeah.
As another thing to say, okay, if I lose, I'm going to disappoint my dad. And if I don't smack talk, if I don't do this or anything like that and degrade this person, then my dad's not going to love me even more. Right. So I have to do what I have to do to keep the peace while also trying to do what I have to do.
Right.
Oh.
Yeah, that's sports is a different animal. It's a different set of pressures. So there's a lot of it's not, because with sports, it's not just the children. It's also the parents, especially when it comes to Little League. You're probably not as big of a problem as the children get older. But it's like when you go to like a Little League game, the parents are problematic, to say the least. Right?
It's like a Major League Baseball game that they're going to. It's not a Little League game anymore.
Yeah.
But you know what, though? I also like whenever they're trying to, when Bender's trying to escape and he winds up falling through the ceiling.
Oh, yeah.
And then he sees Molly and Ring Balls.
Yeah.
Underwear.
Yeah.
I'm like.
Right.
Like, dude.
And then starts starts touching her.
Yeah.
Right.
It's like she's trying to protect him, and at the same time, he's being a creep. So that's.
Right.
That's
I would have ratted him out right then and there. I was like,
I love when they were like when they had escaped the room and they're running through the hallway.
Yeah.
And you know, the teachers or the principal's walking by and barely misses them. But the fact that what Bender did was give himself up so that the other kids would be okay, because like we said, he does, you know, detention all day, you know, right. And protecting them from not having to come back and waste another Saturday.
Oh, what's interesting is that that's him reciprocating what happened earlier. So, like, he disables the door so that the door can close. And in that scene where he's distracting the principal, mm-hmm. he takes the heat in a kind of, you know, to give back to the group.
Right.
So everybody contributes to the welfare of the group. And then he shares his weed with everybody. So they're sad. And everybody.
But it shows that he's like a good guy. Like, it shows that there's a good guy in there. You know, after a while, you see the walls come down and you see that this is a really good guy. He's just screwed. You know what I mean? You know, like the vice principal said, you know, catch up with him 5 years from now, you know, and like you said, John, he'd be a criminal because that's where he was going. But you do get to see that this is actually a good guy that's just protecting himself.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. You know? He's really a victim of his circumstances.
Absolutely. Honestly. He is. Definitely.
In so many ways. Hopefully as an adult, he makes better decisions, but he really is responding to, I mean, it sounds like his home life is terrible.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of what happens when your home life is terrible, you know? I mean, I shouldn't say that that's as a blanket statement, but it for sure in that instance.
Yeah.
But he's also using like the tough kid image to basically not get close to anybody because he's been burnt so many times.
Yeah.
He's like, if I'm just an asshole, nobody will like me. No one will accept me. So I'm just going to put on this show that everybody wants me to put on.
Right.
And just cover up the pain with just being a total ball bag.
Yeah.
So,
and I think it works too, because it sounds like he's, you know, doesn't have trouble in the lady department.
Yeah.
He seems to have a lot of friends. So like something's working outside the classroom for him.
And remember how he protected his friends. Remember when he and Claire were going at it and she had made a statement that he felt like she was comparing herself to his friends, and how he blew up at her. Like, don't even talk about my friends. My friends are nothing like you guys. So it looks like he does get that love with the group of friends that he hangs around with, because he was very protective over talking about his friends.
Right. And they're probably all growing up in some of the same drama. I mean, drama. And maybe that's why they're so connected. And maybe that makes them a much closer group.
Right.
Exactly. And then, you know, another thing I wanted to bring up was, you know, this is, I know that we had, this is mental health month, but this movie is just as much as a mental health movie, though, too, and breaking down the walls and barriers of these kids.
Yeah.
And a principal that's trying to do his job while also being taught a lesson, too, about his own self.
Right.
So it's self-reflection of the adult. In the adult in us, as it is in a reflection on the kids who watch this movie and have a self-reflection on themselves.
Yeah.
So that's the way I look at it. I'm looking at it through the lenses as the vice principal, in a sense, not on that kind of thing where basically I'm going to go in and size this kid up for talking smack to me this whole entire time and put him in my office and degrade him to make him feel little, because this kid's already been through enough. So let me go in and do that to him now.
Right.
But the bad thing is he already knows these kids because of the files. So why would I understand that you have to tear down walls in order to do that? But, you know, it's just sad to hit that he had to go that far to do that.
Right.
You know,
what do you think about how Claire, you know, took, you know, Allison and went and did a whole makeover, you know, on her, you know, and Allison asking, like, why are you being nice to me? And she's like, because you're allowing me to. You know, when they start bonding, but also the question of, on Monday, will we be talking to each other? You know, because you know how it goes. Right. You know, once school starts on Monday, do we know each other? Will we say hi to each other, you know?
Yeah. Right. So I noticed something for the first time that I never noticed in all the times I've seen this movie. But earlier in the movie, I think it might have even been in the closet, Bender takes, or he's going through Claire's purse, and he takes her eyebrow brush and he's brushing his teeth with it.
Right.
And then she uses an eyebrow brush on Allison. And I'm like, is that the same?
Yeah, I saw that. And I was like, wait, he was just brushing his teeth, like cleaning his teeth with it. Is that the same brush? I never noticed that before, never paid attention to it.
I didn't either. I don't know why I picked up on it at that this 100th time I've seen this movie, but I was like, oh no, they can't be the same rug. But people don't typically carry more than one with them.
Right.
Oh, no. It's so unhygienic, yeah. Claire.
I didn't even know the thing that he grabbed with my eyebrow brush.
Oh yeah.
Down at the door, like, what are you talking about? The what?
Right. the thing.
It's for the eyebrows.
I know what it is, but when he grabbed it, it's out of context of what people normally use it for. So to me, he just grabbed a thing. I didn't know what that thing was. And then when Claire is actually using the eyebrow brush, it was like I know what it is, but I didn't know that that's what he grabbed. I guess it's the same one. She rinsed it off and presumably she went to the bathroom and rinsed it off and then with hot water. And then she
We hope so. Definitely.
Hope so.
Because they made us look good high.
Yeah, they were high, so maybe she didn't wash it off.
Yep, exactly.
Maybe, yeah.
Let's also talk about the exchanging of the lunches, though, too. I thought that was pretty funny, too, because I thought that was pretty funny, because he made fun of Brian's lunch as well. I thought that was funny. He goes, wow, you got the whole entire food group in there. You did really good. What's Mr. Rogers like?
I don't know if it was an exchange, more like Fuller just taking what he wanted.
True. Well, for him, I was going through the lenses of how he looked at things, though. So I was like, you know what? He's just he's just exchanging lunches right now. That's all he's doing. He's just trying to see what he likes and then takes it as an exchange. But yeah,
there's lunch. You know, he's like, sushi.
Yeah, I actually had forgotten that, and I was like, oh, I guess people were eating sushi back then, too. I guess I didn't,
I was a little town and
nobody ate sushi where I'm from.
Yeah, I never, ever heard of sushi back then, so when she said sushi, it kind of, I never thought about it either, but yeah, like, they had sushi back then.
No, what you're saying, what's funny is that back then, that would be a very unusual lunch. But nowadays, it's like, now you could go to a fast food joint and get some sushi. You can go to the and get you some sushi. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, you can pick up a bento box at Target now.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And I think it's weird I know what a bento box is, but...
I learned what a bento box from watching Dragon Ball Z. That's how I'm getting it.
Same here, Zoe. That's where I learned. God bless anime, right?
Right.
I love sushi. I'm a sushi girl. I love sushi.
I may have learned it from playing Pokemon at that, too.
That's true. I didn't think about Pokemon. But you know what, though? Going back on the whole sushi thing, though, too, like, I remember it being something that people would eat, but I thought it was something like rich people would eat
for that time. Yeah, probably back then.
Like, also, I could see it in like a country club or something,
I
was
probably.
Yeah, there's a reputation of sushi being raw fish.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it existed because she had it. It just was so unusual, especially like in the Midwest.
Yeah.
Like, it just wasn't a thing where in the town I grew up in or anywhere near where I grew up until probably, I don't even know, but definitely not in the 80s.
Right.
No.
Right.
Because even in Mississippi over here, like, I don't know when we decided to get sushi, but, we went from steak to hamburgers to sushi. So, and it's popular. So, yeah, it's more popular now than it was back in the 80s, though. I just remember being... And I never knew that that was sushi that she was eating either until I watched it recently. Like, okay, that's kind of unusual. You have American, you have the guy with all the food groups in one center. Then you have Japanese. And then I'm like, okay, so cereal? You have different culture.
You got the cereal food.
Cereal.
Yep. Allison with her little pixie sticks and her cereal lunch. Which actually, when I was watching it again, I'm like, that doesn't look terrible. I mean, I think I might enjoy that. Mm-hmm. Like, you like cinnamon and sugar toast, right? Pixie sticks on there and cereal.
Exactly. But so let's go into our rating now that we have stripped away the nostalgia. my 3.5 is probably going to get up there, but I'll let you guys go on ahead, talk about your rating now as an adult.
Definitely a 5. I still feel the same way. It's a great movie. Like, seriously, I really still love the movie to this day.
Okay. Yep. I agree with Rossi. I'm at a 5. I have to say that I think I dislike the vice principal more than I did, and I really disliked him the first time around. As an adult, I think he is just a reprehensible human.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I would have to agree with John with a 3.5. I mean, I think it's a fine movie. Fine piece of entertainment. But
so we're trading off our ratings. Okay, I gotcha.
Right. But it doesn't resonate with me as much as it does, you know, had I watched it when it first came out. Like, I watched Home Alone when it came out, and that has a high, like, nostalgia factor for me, right, and all of those things. So I know that he makes good movies. I have reference points for that. And I've seen like movies, but I didn't watch a lot of coming of age movies. Like, besides this, the closest thing that I could say that I watched was something like Better Off Dead or Stand By Me or even Once Bitten.
That's a good one. Okay. Matter of fact, I watched a Ralph Macchio movie for the first time. That was a 80s movie with Patrick Swayze. My wife introduced me to the film recently. Was that you know the name of it, Rossi and Beth? Yeah. I can't think of the name of it.
But you know what? I was with friends last weekend, and I pointed out to my friends, because I have, like, you know, John, I have a super weird knowledge of all things 80s television. People don't. On the podcast, somebody's like, Casey, remember that one show that was on for 1 week in 1982? But Ralph Macchio was in the last season of 8 is Enough.
Oh, really?
Was he?
Mm-hmm. They brought him in as, like, you know, I guess to boost ratings.
Not My Cousin Vinny, right?
Yeah.
No, that was
I think the movie you're talking about is called The Outsiders.
Yep, that's
The Outsiders. Oh, yeah. Of course. Yeah.
I've never seen the movie. I've seen this, like, last year for the first time.
That's a great movie.
Cynthia Ann came in with the save.
And you know,
thank you, Zoe. Thank you for that.
The only person who was famous at the time was Matt Dillon.
Thank you, Cynthia.
He was the only famous one in that movie. Everybody else was just starting out, even Rob Lowe. They were all about to become huge superstars. And it might have been Tom Cruise's one of his very first films.
Okay.
Just an FYI.
So I'm going to go with mine, the way I'm feeling and everything. So I went from a 3.5. So I'm going to go up to a 4. Because, and here's the thing. I didn't grow up with this film. My rating would have actually been higher if I did grow up with it, like Zoe has said before. But here's the thing. I grew up with 16 Candles. I grew up with Home Alone. I grew up with all these other John Hughes movies, to the point where this is no fault of anybody's or anything. It just happens to land in that kind of down at the bottom for me because of that. And it's the same thing about the original Roadhouse, too. I didn't grow up on the original Roadhouse. So therefore, I can't say that which one was better than the other. So therefore, I'm like, I don't care either way. But with
you
this
know what's
one,
funny about what? Roadhouse? There's so much controversy around that movie with the people who grew up with it and the people who are just not catching up with you. So there are people like you who's like, oh, yeah, they're about the same. And you're exactly right. They're about the same. But for people like me who grew up with it, we're always going to give the earlier version the edge. Right?
Right, exactly. Exactly. But yeah, all in all, 4 out of 5 for me, straight up 4. I'm not going to go any higher or anything like that. But yeah, that's where it's going to land for me. For the stripping away the nostalgia. So that's going to be it for our review. But Zoe, Beth, tell everybody about what your podcast is about. Because I've listened to both of y'all's. And as a matter of fact, I listened to your Wizard of Oz one, Zoe, just recently. So.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate that. I'm steeped in Wizard of Oz right now because I'm listening to a couple of podcasts that are talking about the Wizard of Oz. So it's like I'm up to here with the Munchkins. But anyway, my podcast is called.
What's your level of where you're up to here with the Munchkins?
Yeah, I'm up to here with Munchkins. Munchkins up my keister. all with the singing and the dancing and it's fun.
So you have to see, if you haven't, you got to watch Under the Rainbow with Chevy Chase and Carrie Fisher. It is so funny. It was a great movie. I think it was probably early 80s, and it's about, now I can't remember what it's about, but it has to do with the Wizard of Oz, and there's munchkins in it. I think a murder? I don't remember, but it's funny. You know what? We all have to watch. How can I not remember? I loved it.
It's funny how you throw that. It's funny how you threw that out, because there are two things in all my listening. There are two things that they've talked about. They've talked about, there's a movie about Frank L. Baum. Oh, L. Frank Baum. That John Ritter starred in. And then they talked about a couple of other documentaries about the making of The Wizard of Oz. There's a lot of, it's a lot of behind the scenes with that movie. So yeah, and then there's the Return to Oz, which I hear is good. Another movie I never saw. But my show is, it's called Backlook Cinema, the podcast. And I talk about movies that came out in the last millennium, you know, the movies yesterday. We take a look back at the movies that came out way back when. And the show that I just released, I just mentioned the title, Stand By Me. And I have a guest on from Fat Dude Digs Flicks. And his name is, if I can remember his name, nope, can't remember his name right now. But I'm going to cheat. I think I can look up his name. I'm going to cheat. And see, that's what happens. Oh, I didn't refresh my website. But that's what happens with my memory. I just forget stuff. And you have to deal with that. Well, his name is Andy Heller. So Andy Heller from Fat Dude. See, I remember his podcast, but I could not remember his name. So Andy Heller from Fat Dude Digs Flicks is on the show. And we talk about Stand By Me. That's a fabulous movie. The next movie I have coming up is, I just watched, let's see if I can remember, Rain Man. Tom Cruise.
Nice.
And what's his name? Who's the other guy in Rain Man?
Tom Cruise.
Dustin Hoffman.
That's just a funny, that's like his probably his best role. And I like how it's referenced in Tropic Thunder. But that's the other thing I have upcoming.
I am the main. I'm half of the Made for TV Movie Club podcast. We review TV movies from the 70s, 80s, and 90s, and they are mostly never as good as I remember. Some of them are really terrible, and I'm like, how did I like this? But in May, we do what we call the Murdering Moms Month, because it's Mother's Day. So we actually reviewed this really bizarre movie called The Allegedly True Murder Mom, Cheerleading Mom. I forget what it's Holly Hunter was in it, and Beau Bridges. And it's about a woman who, it's a true story about a woman who tries to hire her ex-brother-in-law to kill the rival of her daughter's cheerleading rival's mom, thinking if the mom is murdered, the girl won't be on cheerleading. It's super weird, and everybody tries to make money. It's crazy, but it's got Holly Hunter. So it was Holly Hunter, but the movie was weird. And it was a big deal when it came out in the early 80s. So that's what we got coming up.
Awesome.
What about for you, Rossi?
Let's see. Sunday we have Grandview. Grandview is going to be on Rossi's Clubhouse, and that's going to be Sunday at 6 o'clock. He's a up-and-coming rapper out of Los Angeles, and he has a show here in Sacramento on Friday night, April 26th at Harlow's Club. He's opening up for the legendary rapper Devin the Dude. So I'm looking forward to talking to him and find out how he got on that tour. That's an awesome gig he has. And he's a really talented artist as well.
Yes, he is. And I'm just geeked out for you on the success that you've been having with the Clubhouse and everything you're doing.
Thank you. A fantastic job over there. Thank you.
But yeah, go ahead, join her in the Clubhouse and everything over there too. She's doing great work over there. Also too, on Rossi Talks, you know, she's also a LinkedIn with me over here though too. But yeah, go ahead, cast your votes on the movie of May of what you want us to vote for. Right now, Super Bad is kicking Bad Boys' butt. You also have them kicking Fast Times at Richmond High, and also Pulp Fiction. So those are the movies that you guys can vote on for this month. I am going to try, we're going to try and do a Deadpool 1 and Deadpool 2 review sometime soon. Rossi and I will be doing that. More stuff to stay tuned for. Matter of fact, I might actually try and do a short film review sometime soon. But that's about everything. And also, too, I ended up dropping a new John DeVolta movie that is coming out on the 28th. So, yeah, Pulp Fiction. That does not count, Cynthia. I do appreciate the effort. If you go to our YouTube channel, please. And just go on ahead and cast your vote there. I understand that you want the VIP, and I understand that. I appreciate that so much. And I appreciate you staying tuned. But you have to... I love the fact that you stay tuned and we're keeping you engaged, but just go on ahead, cast your vote there, and also count that as your vote for Pulp Fiction to make those votes boost up. So, yeah. I don't want to do a misvote or anything. But, you know, I do appreciate it, Cynthia. I really do. But, yeah, that's everything that I have going on over here. Like I said, I ended up dropping the John Travolta movie called... it was actually called Cash Out. That's a new movie that's coming out on the 28th. It's going to be hitting maybe one theater. I mean, it's probably going to be hitting a theater sometime somewhere near you. And I did a review for it. And also coming soon to Vudu. So anyways, that's going to be it as far as the show goes.
Coming soon to Vudu. Tell us how you really feel.
Thank you. Exactly. If you really want to see how I feel about it, either watch the video or you can go on ahead and follow me on Letterboxd and find it over there and look at my rating. So anyways, guys, that's going to be it as far as the show goes. Thank you, Cynthia. Thank you, thank you, Clint. Thank you to my wife for commenting, as always, supporting us, and not the same thing to JoJo. Thank you to everyone in the comment section. You guys are doing fantastic, doing the God's work over there, like Zoe would say, just commenting and everything, doing the Lord's work. So thank you so much. And always until next time, guys. Have a great and safe night. And we'll catch you guys on the next one.